Assalamu alaikum and welcome to the Islamic Pulse Talk Show. We are talking about Mahsa Amini. Assalamu alaikum and welcome, dear viewers. We have in the studio with us Sheikh Ali Qummi from the Islamic Republic of Pakistan, who's going to be talking to us a little bit about Mahsa Amini, especially when taking into consideration that some time has passed. A lot of this fire has cooled down and it has been put under control, but still there's a lot of questions around Mahsa Amini, and so we wanted to clear up the air just a little bit, inshallah. Let's start our discussion by inviting our guest, Sheikh Ali Qummi. Assalamu alaikum and welcome to the Islamic Pulse Talk Show.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thanks for having me.
So Sheikh Ali, it's nice to have you after such a long time. We haven't had you on the talk show. Kam Tawfiq, as they say in Farsi. In the recent weeks and recent couple of weeks, actually, we found that this issue of Mahsa Amini came up. And then after this whole issue regarding Mahsa Amini, there was a lot of, there were some riots in the Islamic Republic of Iran. In the outside world, it was portrayed as something that was really huge and the whole country is on fire and etc. So we here at Islamic Pulse thought that, you know, what an important thing to talk about. And so we wanted to start with, first of all, Mahsa Amini, because it seems like this is supposedly the beginning of this whole episode that we saw in these last few weeks. So just kind of open up a little bit. Let's start with, for example, you know, who she was, or a basic biography of Miss Mahsa Amini, in the name of Allah.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajeem. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. It's a much important topic that needs to be discussed given the situation. Although if you look at the grand scheme of things and what the world is going through, it should have been a trivial thing. Right. But look how it was twisted, turned, and exaggerated in a way that even we have to come out and, you know, discuss this topic. But inshallah, it has its own barakat, and we will try to do justice to the topic and discuss this. This lady, Mahsa Amini, she's Iranian, of course, and born and raised here, as far as I know. And she is, Kurdish background. Right, yes. So she's a Kurd.
Yes.
And I think her age is about 22 years old. Mm-hmm. And, she comes from a Sunni background, you know, she's a Sunni Muslim, and which there are many Sunnis living in Iran, alhamdulillah, they're living peacefully, they're living, with equal opportunity. Even in governmental positions, there are Sunni brothers, and, you know, there are Sunni mosques all over Iran, and, you know, so on and so forth.
Right.
So
there's even Christian churches, there are even
synagogues,
Jewish synagogues,
right,
and then also you have Zoroastrian temples,
right,
also in the Islamic
right.
Republic.
The reason I brought this up, you know, the Sunni aspect, is you may be wondering why. Well, the thing is, with this whole episode of Mahsa Amini, they tried to give it a few different colors.
Right.
And they tried to trigger few different denominations, if you would. Right. So one of them was that they tried to turn it into a sectarian issue that, oh, she was a Sunni girl living in Shia majority or Shia ruled country or something. You know, they tried to build a narrative around that.
Right.
So it's important to understand that, you know, the enemy is not going to let us off the hook. Then she was Kurd, right? So they're like, oh, this whole separatist movement and, you know, Kurdistan and, you know, the Kurds. And so they tried to give it that flavor too. Of course, the human rights and women rights. And so they tried every single dimension that they could have to exploit this whole sad incident, I would say. You know, she shouldn't have died. You know, we don't look forward to anyone dying, you know, especially the young ones. But they tried to give it different colors, right? On purpose.
Right.
Because everything that they were doing, the enemies were doing, was to instigate destabilization and instability in the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Sure.
So that was the end goal,
yes.
Right? Now, whatever it takes is kind of or sort of the approach that they took.
You know, later on, perhaps towards the end of the program or the episode, I do feel like we should bring up the hypocrisy that is clearly seen in the situation where they support one situation and then they totally don't support another situation. And if I remember, I'll bring it up. It has to do with Shah Chiragh and the terrorist acts over there and how the reactions were, because that clearly shows you and proves to you what you just said, was that they don't necessarily care about an individual.
There are contradictions all over the place when it comes to the Westerners and the Western narrative, right? There are contradictions. If you do it, it's wrong. If I do it, it's right. You know, that sort of a thing.
Yes.
And, you know, they can easily turn a blind eye towards a real catastrophe, like in Palestine, like what's going on in Yemen, like what's going on in Bahrain, like what goes on in Nigeria, and so on and so forth. You know, all these issues. They easily and comfortably, the mainstream media or their ringleaders, or even their, you know, bosses who are running the entire setups, they turn a blind eye towards human agony, human pain, what the general population of the world, including their own countries, let's say the United States of America, let's say Canada, let's say, you know, what goes on in Europe, what goes on in France, they turn a blind eye towards all of these real catastrophes, and they turn something like, you know, Mahsa Amini, which again, like we said, it's a sad incident, shouldn't have happened, but they turned this into an exponentially improportionate, severity.
Right.
And they sensationalize the whole thing, right?
Right.
So this is all that is happening in front of us, you know, and this is a very clear contradiction to what goes on, you know, with the Western media and the Western imperialists and the Zionists.
Right. So Sheikh Ali, this was kind of a little bit of a background about who Mahsa Amini was. Of course, we see that there's different, as you said, there's different angles and aspects that the enemy and the foreign media and these guys took out to try to pit, you know, people against one another within the country. But still, you know, we saw that in the mass media, there was a lot of emphasis on this quote unquote fact, right? That she was somehow tortured, you know, or that she was, for example, detained, you know, or that she was perhaps hit on the head. I mean, these kind of things, which it was so prevalent in the mass media. One really interesting thing, as I pose the question to you, we find that Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei, he very beautifully said, even before any investigation was done, these kind of wild and bizarre allegations, without any proof, without any evidence, was just thrown out by the mass media to an extent which is, I mean, unbelievable, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you can talk to us a little bit about that, you know, that she was tortured to death.
Well, we can testify. If you look at the chronological order of things and, you know, the sequence of things, we can testify to how the bandwagon of, you know, this whole Mahsa Amini thing was prepared, launched, and it was up and running even before any official statements could have been made.
Right.
So the lady, she got picked up by the Gasht-e-Irshad, is what they call it. This is basically a guidance patrol, right? Mm-hmm. They are supposed to, you know, one of the responsibilities that they have is to make sure that the society is safe for everyone, whatever safe defines for them, whatever safe defines for Iran, you know, they have their own definition of what safety is, what security is, what decency is, right? And similarly, what vulgarity is and what, you know, crossing the line is. Every country has their own definition of that, right?
Sure.
So whatever that definition is, they're there to patrol the areas and make sure that it's happening. Normally, for those who have come to Iran or those who are living in Iran, because this incident took place in Tehran, those who have been to Tehran, they know that the Islamic hijab, right, the proper Islamic hijab, as it's supposed to be, where not even one of your hair can show, you know, there are guidelines where your wrist, you know, above your wrist, nothing can be shown, your feet cannot be shown, right? All of those different criteria of what Islamic hijab is.
Sure.
Everybody knows that definition does not apply in Tehran, to say the least.
They're relaxed in Tehran.
They're relaxed, right?
The dress code is...
Right. Generally speaking, you don't see this Gasht-e-Irshad, you know, taking all of these ladies to somewhere, you know, where they're going to be taken to a jail or a detention center or a police station or nothing.
Because,
no, it's pretty relaxed.
As you're saying, there's so many of these women who are not following this 100% hijab that if they took everybody in, it'd be in the hundreds.
Right. Or maybe more, not or just hundreds, more, right? Yeah. For those who have been to Tehran.
Yeah.
Now, there's a difference between hijab and the minimum dress code.
Mm-hmm.
The minimum dress code requirement, the minimum dress requirement, right? And every country has it,
sure,
right? And every country, different places in one country have different requirements of dress codes and dressings. So you don't go to, I don't know, a sports complex in the same attire that you go to your workplace in.
Sure.
Right? And you can't switch the two, right? You can't walk into a corporate office, you know, I don't know, with your sleeveless and you know, your
tank tops.
Exactly.
They'll actually kick you out.
They do, right?
Actually, in certain
even
gas
in restaurants.
In the United States, maybe this is what you were going to say, but in certain restaurants in the United States, even gas station stores, it says on the outside, it says, no shirt, no service.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not talking about women, it's talking about men, because it's close to the beach.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, you are on the beach, you don't wear a shirt.
You just roll into a gas station to grab a pack of,
you know
exactly.
A Coke or
a
Sprite or a Zumba or something.
Exactly.
And even there it says, no shirt, no service.
So, dress code is, for human beings, for any human society, it is something that is a given. Every human society has it. Let it be Western or Eastern human society. And Iran is no exception.
Right.
They have a dress code too, that this is the bare minimum that you're going to have to wear if you're going to be in public settings.
Right.
So this lady, of course, has to have crossed that limit. Right. And by the way, she was with her family, like her cousins and stuff. Right. They were given a tazakkur as well. They were given a, you know, a reminder too, like, you know, fix up yourself or whatever. They did. This lady, Mahsa Amini, was the only one taken in, right?
Mm-hmm.
When they followed the rules of the country, they were let go. And this is what the Gasht-e-Irshad is supposed to do.
Right.
Every day they bring in, like, you know, I don't know, 50, 100, 200, whatever X number, right? And what do they do to these ladies when they bring them in?
Or men, for example. Like,
as a matter of fact, I wanted to bring it up later, but you said it.
Right.
See, it's not just for the women.
Right.
You know,
right.
Sometimes people think it's just to enforce hijab. No, it's basically to make sure that the society is decent for others to roam around and be in that society and live in that society,
right? It's pretty much a public safety concern type thing. And so that public safety, whether it is, actual physical corruption such as stealing or looting or turning things on fire, or whether it's moral corruption in this case, which is an even higher spiritual level or a higher philosophical conceptual level, that not only is this, you know, guidance service people, not only are they, you know, being careful for this kind of looting and fire and stealing, etc., you know, but they're also being careful for the moral well-being of the families and of the people.
Even, for instance, jaywalking on street, right? I mean, they would actually stop that person and say, you know, you're risking your life.
Right.
You're actually risking other people's lives. You know, you're interrupting the traffic. You know, somebody's... So all of these things, you know, it's not just a hijab enforcement as it's being portrayed in the...
Right.
In the Western media.
And this is what's important, is that you see, it's such a different religious, spiritual, philosophical concept behind this. But when it is being portrayed in the mass media, it's like, well, these guys are the, you know, the hijab KKK, for example.
Exactly. And honestly, if you don't have that bare minimum dress code for any country or any society, hypothetically, which I said, it's not like that. Every country has it. But let's say there's none. Then where do you stop?
Right.
You know, where do you stop?
I mean,
how much of your clothes can you take off if you're going to be in public settings where they're going to be kids, they're going to be young ones, they're going to be women, they're going to be men, they're going to be elderly people? How much of it is going to be allowed or sensible? Well, everybody has their own definition. So for a country, inevitably, they have to have some sort of a bare minimum dress code for their own society. And I feel for every country, it should be in the hands of that country itself.
Right.
Nobody should be dictating from outside what the people of that country should wear while they're in their own country.
Right? It's actually ridiculous.
And I don't know how the West, while they have a criticism of, you know, this police-e-irshad, they're trying to police the entire world. Right? They're trying to tell the entire world what you should wear and what you should not wear. How much of it is okay and how much of it is not okay. So you have the right to tell the whole world, but poor Iran doesn't even have the right to tell its own people what they want, right. What the majority of the country wants, what right. the decency is, and actually what Islam wants. Because ideally, you know, we would like to see these societies progress and develop to a point where the Islamic guidelines of dress code are implemented in societies. That is the ideal. That is the matlub. Right? Mm-hmm. But we're not even talking about that. We're talking about this low level thing. So this lady.
So this is where you were. You were that she was with her cousins, right?
Correct.
And then one of these, and usually what I've seen, at least in the holy city of Qom, is that the women will approach the women and the men will Correct. Approach the men.
Yes.
So it's not like she had some kind of buff male police officer, you know, like in the US, it's quite scary.
Yeah.
It's like 6-7 foot tall guy, you know, 250 yeah. pounds comes at you. No, the women deal with the women and then the men deal with the men. And in the holy city of Qom, they just come. And I've seen it myself, you know, they'll say that, you know, sister, my sister, you know, or if she's a little bit older in age,
they're actually,
my mother, they say, listen, can you fix your hijab a little bit?
They're generally speaking,
and they walk away.
They're generally speaking, very respectful and they're careful and kind of, you know, they're alert and they know the fact that if you tell something to someone on a street, they're going to react to it, right?
Yeah.
So let's say if you're walking on a street, you know, you're having your hands like this, and I come up to you, I'm like, Sayyid Shahryar, can you walk with your hands like this? Not like this, right?
Mm.
You're going to take offense of it, you know?
Mm.
Let me walk, right?
Sure, yeah.
So generally, these people know that if we go up to someone, you know, they're not going to be happy seeing us that, you know, we're telling them what to do with their lives, right? That
yeah.
sort of a thing. So generally, they're overdoing their akhlaq, their ethics and morals.
Because they know they're going to get a kind of, they might get a negative
they
reaction.
They might, yeah.
So they're kind of cool-headed about it. They're
exactly.
relaxed. They're extra
exactly.
nice. Listen,
exactly.
come on, you know, take it easy. It's okay.
Generally, it's like that because,
sure.
you know, it's
so
part of their job responsibility.
When things get out of hand is when the other person, as you say, shows a very severe reaction.
Right. Exactly. And this is when
in the United
what happens.
States, they shoot you if you show a severe.
Of course,
reaction.
You know, if you with the law enforcement agencies,
sure.
if you are actually getting at odds with them, they have a right to do whatever to contain you, right?
To contain you. Yeah.
So it doesn't happen that much in Iran. What they do with these ladies is they take them to this, you know, center that they have.
Yeah.
At that center, you know, generally they get given an advice, a hadith, maybe a verse of Quran, you know, how decency is important in the society, how vulgarity is going to ruin our generations and our
sure.
culture. And, you know, that's sort of a kind of a small little lecture, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, they're given a warning that don't do this again, you know, otherwise, you know, so on and so forth.
Right. Yeah.
Generally, this is where it ends.
Of course.
I right. mean, this guidance.
The environment cools down and
right.
everybody's fine.
Right.
Listen, you know, they're respectfully telling me. Yeah, sure.
And it's in extreme cases that they take someone. Like, this is my initial point, right? It's not like every woman who has, you know, improper hijab or any man who is like, I don't know, picking his nose on the street, you know, they don't get taken to this.
Right.
No, it's, you know, when there's some sort of extreme cases.
Right.
Because these people, at the end of the day, they're employees, right, of the system. When they take someone in, and let's say that person was not doing anything wrong or extreme or, you know, violent, or they get treated by their superiors.
Yeah,
why
I mean,
do you keep bringing
report.
People in, right?
Yeah.
We have to create this whole report now. We
yeah,
have to write
yeah.
their name. So it's a headache for all of them. So know that, you know, generally they avoid taking anyone in, right?
Right.
But regardless, you know, it ends up being 100, 200 people maybe, you know, a day. You know, a place like Tehran, you know, they would take.
And
they would,
I even think that's maximum.
That too is on the higher side,
yeah,
you know.
I would have to check those statistics because
yeah.
even I think 100 is a lot.
Yeah.
I would be surprised if
yeah.
they, you know.
I'm being, you know,
I think it's
careful
quite,
here
yeah,
that
it's on
the upper side.
The high side, yes. Yeah,
the idea is, you know, to make sure that the society is safe for everyone to
right.
Live in and
here,
survive
in.
In
this situation, there was something wrong.
Correct.
That they had to take it to the next level and actually bring her to the center.
Exactly.
And tell her, listen, you know, this is the religion.
Yes.
You know, what's wrong? Maybe you have some family problems.
Right.
I wouldn't be surprised if they did this. And so continue.
So she gets there, right, in a van or whatever. They take her there. There are hundreds of other women. I don't know if you have seen the, you have seen the footage, right? The CCTV footage.
Yes.
So they're like, I could easily say 50, 60, 70 ladies sitting there in the waiting area where she was sitting as well, or she was standing.
And Tehran, I just want to add, is a big city. It's well over 13, 14 million people.
A lot of people.
So even if you have 50, you know, out of 14 million, I mean, you know, anyways, please.
So they're there, right? All of them. And then she talks to one of the lady police officers or whoever the, I don't know, they're not police really.
Irshad
people, you know, the lady Irshad people, for the lack of better word.
Mm-hmm.
So they talked, they exchanged some, you know, comments, and the lady, this Mahsa Amini, she is fine up until that point. CCTV footage is showing there are other women there, you know, waiting for their turn to get the tazakur and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
She's fine, right? She's having this conversation. I don't know what the conversation was about, but there was no physical contact between the two.
Actually,
right?
It looked like Mahsa Amini was yelling at the lady
Irshad
officer.
Yes.
I mean,
but
she was like this all
exactly,
up in her face, you
right.
know? And the other lady was kind of backing up.
Right. So she leaves, she goes away, and Mahsa Amini starts walking towards a chair to grab a chair to sit. Up until that point, because she has already been, remember, the sequence is important, she has already been transported to the center in that van, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where allegedly she was brutally, what?
Yeah, bludgeoned and
something assaulted.
Assaulted.
Oh man. Okay. Brutally assaulted, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, hang on one second. You get to the center, the first thing you should do is like let everyone know that I'm being brutally assaulted and
mm-hmm.
you know they hit me on the head. As a matter of fact, if you get hit on the head, which is actually, according to their narrative, going to cause your death, you shouldn't be able to talk and walk.
You should have a concussion.
Right? You should already be, you know, in a bad shape.
Yeah.
But things look very normal there. The CCTV footage is very clear. So that's the first thing that everybody needs to know, that, you know, she gets there, she has that conversation. Now she's going towards the chair. CCTV footage is showing it. And then she falls down, right?
It was so strange because you've seen it too. And I think the world has seen it. But sometimes we see it and we don't pay attention. It's like we, you know, as an individual out there, we're not paying attention. It is so strange because literally she's just standing there and in less than like a split second, she just falls and dies.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, she doesn't die apparently.
No.
But she just falls right there and it looks like she's dead.
Right. Another thing that they put an allegation on this this force, this police or whatever, they said that she died in that center.
Mm-hmm.
Which is again
which
a
is
lie.
What I almost said. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is again a lie, a blatant lie.
That she died in this center.
Yes. Right. As she fell down, ambulance was called. She was transported to the nearest hospital for treatment. And again, there is CCTV footage even outside. You know, when they bring her out and take her into that ambulance and get taken to the hospital. That's again on CCTV footage, right?
Sure.
And according to so many witnesses, like it's not even a discussion in Iran.
Right.
But see, outside, it's a complete different environment. They're saying, oh, she was taken there, brutally assaulted, and she was killed and she died in that center, right?
In the center, yeah.
Nothing like that happened. It's completely a made up story, right? So she gets taken to the hospital. Now let's say that, you know, they wanted to assault and kill her. Why would they actually release the video of her being taken to hospital? Why would they do it in front of everyone? Remember Khashoggi?
Yeah, sure, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Jamal.
You would want to do something like that. You know, that the Saudis and, you know, their masters, Americans, you know, they ended up conspiring and doing, right? You would want to do something, you know, very concealed, very quietly, take her to a side, you know, in a room or...
And disappear. And
exactly.
In some countries, these people just disappear.
Exactly.
You know?
Many countries, actually, not just some countries, right? So she gets transported to the hospital. Again, everything is happening in public. Like I said, it's not even a discussion in Iran whether she was assaulted and killed in the police station or whatever, detention center, whatever you want. So it's actually a very nice facility. I wish, you know, people, if you can, show that footage in our talk show, because I really doubt mainstream media would have shown it to the world.
Even right? calling it a detention center.
I don't know what to call it is what I'm saying,
but
right?
Like, so I just wanted to add a, you know, a tateme, a caveat in there, or a side note, footnote, you know, that it's not necessarily a detention center. Detention center, and I think this is why they purposely use this word, because it has this connotation yeah. of incarceration.
Right.
Right? It's just a more proper or a sugar-coated term of saying throw somebody in jail.
Right.
But this is not a detention center, actually. It's quite...
It's a tazakkur center. Yeah, I don't know what tazakkur is in English.
Yeah, it's a guidance or a kind of like a...
Lecture them, you know.
A guidance center.
Remind them of their responsibilities.
They come in there and then they tell them, you know, as we...
So show that footage if you can. It's like, you know, it doesn't look anything less than a hospital waiting area. No, she was free. Right? She was free. It's like very nice chairs, you know, there ladies, other ladies are sitting there. Anyway, she gets taken to the hospital.
It's
where...
so strange. I'm sorry, because it came to my mind, and, you know, and I think it's kind of interesting. So the George Floyd guy, right? So not only did the guy have his knee on the guy's neck, he had him on the ground, mm-hmm. face down, and he had his hands tied.
Right.
I mean, whether it was a zip tie, or it was handcuffs, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know, but mm-hmm. his hands were tied behind right. his back. He was on face down, right? And all this makes a difference, because
right.
that
right.
puts more pressure on your lungs when you're face down. Then the guy has his knee on that guy's neck. And then the guy is continuously saying, I cannot breathe. Mm-hmm. I cannot breathe until the guy dies. Who?
Mm-hmm.
Look at that video.
Right.
Look at this video. I mean, it's
right.
a world apart.
Right.
But anyways, right. continue. I'm sorry.
Even like, you know, when it comes to testimonies, nobody testified that, you know, she was assaulted or anything like that. And like we said, you know, it just doesn't go with the reality on ground, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So show that video again, that CCTV footage about what we're talking. Then she gets transported to the hospital where apparently, according to the report, she was alive for 3 days. She was being treated. And, you know, I've read some places that she was in coma, right? She was, and again, you know, there's a reason, the cause of her death, which we're going to get into. But she was alive for 3 days, mm-hmm. right? She was there in the hospital for 3 days. So 16th of September is when she was announced mm-hmm. Dead, mm-hmm. right? Now, this natural death, how did it occur? Right. According to the report, it's the cerebral hypoxia due to sudden heart rhythm disorder, decreased blood pressure and loss of consciousness and insufficient oxygen to the brain.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now, this is the official cause of her death.
Mm-hmm.
When she was 8 years old, because when she passed away, she's 22-ish, right? 22. When she was 8 years old, she had a brain surgery.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Right? Her medical records, they show that she had a brain surgery and she was on some medications, which I'm going to have to read because I'm not a doctor by profession. She used to take hydrocortisone. Okay. And levothyroxine.
Mm-hmm.
Another one, right? And desmopressin.
Mm-hmm.
So these were the drugs that she was already taking. Right, a 22-year-old lady. So she had medical condition, right? This is not natural for a 22-year-old to take all these.
And it seems like it's a medical condition that not only includes the heart, but it seems to also include the brain.
Exactly. So, you know, this is what caused her death. And, you know, she probably couldn't just take the pressure at that time that, you know,
well,
she was in the situation.
But I was going to cut in mm-hmm. and tell you that mm-hmm. this kind of autopsy report or cause of death, it could very well happen if you get incredibly angry.
Mm-hmm.
If you get really angry, and I know I've seen this, right?
Right.
Or I've heard stories about this, for example,
right.
that you get angry enough, your blood pressure hits the roof, people get a stroke, and they die.
Right.
Simple as that.
Right.
Go ahead, continue.
So there was a CT scan done on her head.
And there was
head,
a CT scan done after this.
Why? Why did they want to do this CT scan? Because of these allegations that the mainstream media.
Right.
So they're like, okay, you know, in addition to her medical treatment and her checkup, we're going to make sure that CT scan reports are reviewed by the law enforcement agencies. And so they take it.
So they
there
did
was
their
no
proper
assault.
Investigation.
And this is the point,
the authorities
right?
Authorities did their proper investigation.
Agha Raisi, who was the president of Iran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, he was on his trip at that time. Overseas, right, for
yeah,
that
I think
conference.
It was at the United Nations.
right? Now, he gave a statement from there that we're going to thoroughly look into it, right? So it's not something that we're just going to rug under, shove under the rug and, not look towards. No, and even the judicial system here in Iran, the responsible people, the judges and the justices, right, the Qazi, they even said that, yes, we are going to look into it thoroughly. And whoever, if there is anyone behind this and it's not a natural death, we're going to take action, right? Sure. Just right. The regular procedure, right? Yes, this is not the problem. The problem was not justice for this Mahsa Amini lady. The issue was the West's desperation to destabilize Iran, and they saw it as an opportunity.
Right.
That's why it blew out of proportion.
Right.
It was not because of any of, none of those things, even till date, got proven. None of those things that the mainstream media, kept pounding as facts.
Facts. And facts to the, so you have one fact that is just like, okay, for example, there's approximately 300 million people in the United States. That's
right.
Quote unquote fact.
Right.
And there's another fact, which, for example, if I make the connection, if you allow, that Colin Powell brings to the table and then attacks a sovereign nation, Iraq.
Exactly.
These are facts.
Mm-hmm.
And it was these kind of facts that were being brought up, right? There was so much media pressure, and this was being hit home, all of these things as a fact, in order to somehow not just destabilize, but perhaps find a way to attack the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Well, the bottom line is the regime change. America's and the West's, never materializing dream, as we call it. They've been trying for it for over 40 years. It has not happened. And they saw it as an opportunity to kind of stir things up and take it towards regime change, which, by the way, these rioters, and we will talk about them maybe later on, these rioters, they're ringleaders. They came out. So what happens in Iran typically when the protests...
I want to leave this rioter part for that, next one, that next... because, anyways.
Right.
So here, one thing, though, I wanted to make a connection before we go towards the end of the program is that, so we saw this massive amount of, quote unquote, support for Mahsa Amini, right? I mean, and the numbers are there, millions of tweets and anyways, which I think we'll get into later on.
Right.
But what I found really unfortunate was that just within these last few weeks, along with this Mahsa Amini and these riots, we find this Shah Chiragh, who was the, it's a shrine in the city of Shiraz, one of the bigger cities of the Islamic Republic of Iran. And it is the mausoleum or the shrine, the haram, of the son of the seventh divinely appointed Imam, Imam al-Qadim, alayhi salam, right? So here we find that this gunman comes and he shoots down these people and he kills and martyrs women and children. And I wanted to get your comment on this and your take, that there is a complete silence on this terrorist attack massacre that occurred and killed multiple, I think it was at least 15 individuals that were killed in a holy site, who had gone there on a regular day, to pray and worship and be with their family. Somebody's mother died, somebody's dad died, somebody's son died. I mean, it was really horrific. And the mass media did not say a single word about it.
They, in fact, went a step further and they blocked anything that came out in support of Shah Chiragh. Right? This duplicity of the West and the duplicity of the Western media empire and the hypocrisy of the West and the hypocrisy of this media empire, it is not a news. I think general masses have realized now. It's not even that they are realizing it. They have realized it now. After 1 month of Mahsa Amini, what happened in Afghanistan with these girls in the school?
Right,
they were bombed.
Yeah,
where is that sympathy for women, women rights, all the activists, their hearts melting away? Oh my God, like hijab and this. Where is it all? Why is it that they don't speak up? Why?
The Iraqi girl that died in Iraq when the Americans were doing some kind of military drills. She was like a teenager too. It's around the same time.
This is 50 plus. It's because it was an operation of CIA operatives in Afghanistan carried out by ISIS mercenaries, which is the product of the United States of America.
Sure.
So they don't want to say anything about the Afghanistan incident. This is 1 month after, approximately, roughly 1 month after Mahsa Amini thing. Mm. So it's not about Mahsa Amini. It's not about hijab even. Mm. It's not about anything.
Rights. It's not about human rights.
It's about launching a media trial and a media campaign against the Islamic Republic of Iran. And why? We will get into the details. Why do they always target Iran? What is their problem with Iran? Sure. Right? We will talk about it.
Sure. So, Sheikh Ali Khumi, I don't know if do you have anything else regarding these kind of details about Mahsa Amini. Even though I think we covered quite a bit, I wasn't planning to do the program, the talk show, to be this long. But I mean, if there is anything. And perhaps if you'd like to give some kind of tazakkur or advice to the viewers out there, especially when it comes to where they're intaking their information, what news sources they are going to, and how much they should believe these news sources.
The advice comes from the leader of the Muslim Ummah, Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei. He says that you should be empowered and enable yourself to do a tafkik and do a segregation between haq and batil, right, truth and falsehood. You know, this is very important for every single one of us, you know, whether they're in the hausa, whether they're in the college, school, universities, you know, whether they're a professional working somewhere, you know, at a bank or whatever, right? It is important for each single one of us to be able to decipher information and misinformation and reach to the truth and reach to the falsehood and be able to distinguish between the two. This is essential and important, right? Do not just take things on their face value. We live in a time where propaganda is the way to go, you know, at least for the tawaghit and the enemies of humanity, I would say, right? They would go at any length. They would lie. And there's so many things, man. Allow me to say this, right? This lady, I forgot her name. Maybe you remember. She's still alive. And the media reported her to be dead in these protests and stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then they had hashtags and, you know, in the midst of everything, right? Mahsa Amini is going on and they bring this Iranian lady. I forgot her name. They're like, she's dead, right? Mm. It's on all like social media platforms and all mainstream media. Mm. And the girl's family, poor girl's family, they said, no, she's still alive. She's alive. Yeah. Nothing happened to her. Why are you saying that our daughter is dead?
Yeah.
Now, you wouldn't know the second thing because there's no one to take their voice to you. But that mainstream media and the social media blatantly lying, blatantly misinforming you, you know, do not take information from these sources. You know, make sure your sources are clean. They are verified. They are stable. They are authentic sources, right? Don't just believe everything you hear and see in today's time and age.
Right. Sheikh Ali, I want to get one more point out of you, you know, because as you were speaking, it really reminded me of the tradition that is found in Nahjul Balagha from Imam Ali alayhi salam, where he talks about in a environment of fitna. I paraphrase, you know, be like a baby camel,
right,
where neither can you milk this camel nor can you ride the camel, right?
Mm-hmm.
So without going into too many of the intricate details and the beauty of the words of Imam Ali alayhi salam, you know, I think, and I'd like to get your words on this, is that when you see this kind of a fitna, is don't automatically jump on every single bandwagon.
Right.
No, she definitely died. You know, or CNN is definitely correct. I was going through some of the comments in one of the places, and the person kept on sourcing CNN. CNN says it. CNN says, is CNN the Quran? You know, is CNN the hadith of the the messengers or the divinely appointed imams? And you keep on sourcing CNN like this is the, you know, go-to all source of...
Yeah, it's like a Bible or something.
It's like the Bible, yeah. You know, Fox News or these guys or the BBC. But this idea of in a fitna, that the, because I wouldn't be surprised if this will continue to happen as
of course
history, continues.
See, one thing, you know, the way I wanted to approach this topic, which didn't end up happening because of the situation, you know, that we're in, we had to kind of directly get at Mahsa Amini. The real way to approach such topics is the ideological approach, sure. Right? Look at the past 40 years.
Sure.
Right? 40 plus years that the Islamic Republic of Iran, you know, as a matter of fact, and I'll point it out, just take this as a comment for now, 1953 is what it goes back to, not even 1979.
Sure.
Right? As the leader points out. So just look at the history and see the enmity and the reason of this enmity of the West against the Islamic Republic of Iran, this hostility. Right? Why? What are the major issues? Right? It is a continuation. You know, for those who are not young, old enough to know, in Fitna Hashtad-o-Hasht, right? Mm. Which was 2009?
Yes, 2009.
Right? 2009 sedition, right? Again, they wanted to like overthrow the entire system, the regime, as they call it, the Mullah regime, right?
Sure, sure.
Why do they want to do that? What is going on behind the scenes? Or now on the scenes for those who are informed, right? Try to create that depth within your analysis of the current affairs. Don't just look at these issues in isolated manner where you don't look at the peripheries, you don't look at, you know, the build up to that, you don't look at what else was going on in the world at that time. You just go and focus on that particular issue. This is what the enemy wants you to do. Because then they fabricate, you get tangled in their fabrications and their lies and their allegations, and you know, you don't even know how you got there.
Right.
So don't just, you know, be a very simpleton and, you know, very superficial analyst. Every single one of us should try to go deeper into the realities, the dynamics, the equation, how the West is losing its plots and schemes,
right.
For 40 plus years, you know. And then you would start to see the dots that connect to each other.
Right. Jazakallah khair. There's so many other things that I would have loved to talk about. Even now in my head is just spinning to these different questions, different
right.
things. But
right.
Inshallah, we will hold you to another Islamic Pulse talk show. But Jazakallah khair wa afiyah. Thank you for joining and sharing your knowledge and your wisdom with us on the episode.
You're very welcome. I hope it helps the viewers, inshallah.
Inshallah. And dear viewers, thank you for joining us. That's all from now. We were talking about Mahsa Amini. Don't get caught in this whirlpool of lies and propaganda. Be careful of who and what your sources are, because eventually they do create the thoughts in your mind, and God forbid, that will lead to us becoming the mouthpieces of the enemy. Of course, something that we don't want. Until another episode, that's all from us. Fi amanillah and assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.